This episode is recorded with Avi Dabush. On a regular day, Avi Dabush was the CEO of Rabbis for Human Rights in Israel. And I interviewed him in the past. He's a dear friend of mine. And we were talking about politics and about what's happening in the West Bank. But Avi is also a member of Kibbutz Nirim. Kibbutz Nirim is one of the 11 points that was set up in the early days of the establishment of the State of Israel. And it was one of the kibbutzim that was attacked by Hamas in the horrible massacre of the Black Sabbath on October 7th. Avi was able to be rescued. He saved his family, sitting in the shelter and blocking the doors, pushing the Hamas terrorists, keeping them out. And I think that his testimonial is really powerful, not just because it's important to tell people what happened, but also because of the message that he carries. So I'm just asking that you'll listen, share, and support those communities. I'm going to add links in the episode description. Please share them with your loved ones and with people that you think that can help. Thank you very much. Avi Dabush, how are you doing these days?
It's kind of a question that you don't ask people after such an horrific experience. In a way, we are focusing on each moment, each hour, each day. The past is horrifying, and the future, we don't know what is going on with our community, with our area near Gaza border. But in that sense, we're okay.
So I want to ask you, until last Saturday, you lived in Kibbutz Nirim. Let's talk about the kibbutz first. I want you to describe the community and how life were until the Black Sabbath.
Yeah. So I live in the Gaza area for something like 15 years. Some of them in Kibbutz Bor Hail. It's another kibbutz. It's something like 7 kilometers from Gaza border near Sderot. The last 6 years, most of them, 5 years, I lived in Sderot. And in the last year, I live in Nirim. My wife is from Nirim. It's a new round of being with her and her kids and my kids between Bor Hail and Nirim. And we have a new house, actually. We just made it possible for our family to come together. So last November, we moved into this house. Till then, we were in two houses in Sderot and Nirim. And the community, it's not a big kibbutz, not very small. Something today we are talking about more than 400 people. You can see it, we'll talk about what is happening now in Nirim, but everybody's saying, and I'm really proud of my wife that she's leading this phase of the kibbutz. This is the seventh time she's leading the evacuation of the kibbutz since Protective Edge. So everybody says that Nirim is a strong community, and this is really true. It's not that there aren't a lot of weak people or varied people like in any community in this area and maybe in any place on earth. But as a community, it's strong. And I must say, as a spoiler, that the leadership is in a lot of ways, practical and deep ways of women. And this is really interesting that it's very strong and intelligent and a women with a lot of a responsibility, responsible to their community. And this is the way that Nirim is from day to day. And now we are in a very different situation, of course.
So you're saying that less testosterone actually helps leadership?
Yeah. I really want to see to live to the days that in Israel and in other countries, maybe even to dream in our region, in the Middle East, we will see more and more women leading also the country leadership and not only the settlements and the communities.
So on that Shabbat of October 7th, when did you wake up? When did you realize that something is happening?
On Friday night, we had the celebration of the kibbutz. It was 77 years for the kibbutz is and Nirim is one of the 11 points, and it has a very interesting history. It used to be in Dan Gur, another point in 46, and moved out there after the independence war. It was really nice, and also my children was there, and my older son walked in the celebration, and then I told him, maybe you can stay to the Saturday, and he said, no, I want to go back to my mother, because it was 2 weeks that they didn't see her because she was abroad. And then on Saturday morning in 6:38, we woke up in our bed, my wife and I, to sirens. And of course, it's not, unfortunately, it's not, it's a common thing in this area. And we ran to the shelter and we woke up her children. She have a 12-year-old son and 15-year-old daughter. And we ran to the shelter. And after a few minutes, something like 5 minutes, we started to hear gun shooting. It really was something that it's not common. We didn't experience that in the last years. We understood that something is happening. Of course, we didn't know if it's our army or the people, some of the people. We have some kind of a squad that have guns, you know, civilians from the...
What's called Kitat Konenut, an emergency action group, I would call it in English.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, they saved us in this Saturday. And so I ran out of the shelter. I closed all the electronic windows and shut the door, locked the door. And everything, of course, is open in a kibbutz. And I took the cell phones and a charger and water and ran to the shelter. I don't know exactly to even understand why it's like... from a kind of a subconscious thing that happened. Again, we are not used to it. And after 5 minutes, we heard the Hamas soldiers or terrorists under our window. They switched commands in Arabic, and it was really frightening, again, for us and for the children. But again, I must say that it's not a thing that we didn't anticipate. We thought that sometimes, and of course, Hamas always trying, they will manage to get into settlements around and into communities. So we thought after 10 minutes, 15 minutes, this emergency Kitat Konenut, as we called it, those people with guns or the army will come and wash them away. But of course, that wasn't the case. And generally, we had 8 hours of complete terror with no army. A lot of we were, of course, on our community net on WhatsApp, and we heard we saw that a lot of people are saying they are getting into our house, they are burning our houses, coupled with 10 days baby. They started to say that our house is burning and the baby is suffocating, and help, help, help. And people are saying, okay, open the window and jump outside. And they're saying the terrorists are outside. So what can we do? And again, help, help, help. And a lot of other people, they're saying they're trying to get into the shelter, or they shot someone, or they kidnap someone. And my wife is also part of the heads of the emergency groups all around. So she told me that a lot of other places, like Kibbutz Nir Oz, which is the closest kibbutz, En Hashlosha, Kisufim, Magen, Re'im, again, calling for help. Again, you know, in a way, begging for the army to come. And it was like all the basic things that we know about reality collapsed, because we didn't thought that in Israel with the great army, and we are so strong, of course, in a border that we are in 22 years of war since the first rocket in April 2001 on Sderot. So we are so experienced, and there are so, we thought, so many army soldiers around us, that we couldn't even imagine in our worst dream that something like that really can happen. After 8 hours, the army came into the houses and cleared the houses, going to every room, to each room, and see that there are no Hamas soldiers, there are no terrorists. We had another 4 hours in the shelters, and then they evacuate us into the kibbutz club. You know, we have a big shelter there, and we were all the people, like 400, you know, all the community and visitors that came to the celebration. We were there for something like 18 hours till on Sunday, something like 2 in the afternoon, they evacuate us outside. Like we have something like 5 minutes to take whatever we could take. I remember that I had this thought that this is for 4 or 5 days. We didn't realize, and we were all still in shock, of course, when we didn't realize the disaster that we lived in or we're still living in. So they rushed us out of the kibbutz of Nirim. I must say that Nirim, I didn't say that Nirim is something like 1 or 2 kilometers from Khan Yunis, from the border, and took us to Eilat. I personally stayed in the area because my children were in Bor Hail, so I went to Be'er Sheva and then to Bor Hail. It was really, again, scary and not simple. It took me hours because all the roads are barriers of the army, and then they closed it because there was a lot of terrorists all around. And I did that night between Sunday and Monday in Bor Hail. Again, in Sderot area, and then we left. I left with my children's mother and them to Eilat, and it was really so sad. And like all the way, my older son is 17, is in last year on high school. He's telling us, you know, a friend of my kid that she's part of his class, she died with all of her family, 6 people, her parents and 4 children in Kfar Aza, the Goldstein family. And after that, another family from Kfar Aza, Kutz, again, he's saying all the family, parents and 3 children got killed. The older son is playing soccer with him, and the younger is on the same classes of my other son, which is 9th grade. And after that, he's saying that he's a teacher, he's a Bible teacher, he's missing and kidnapped after that from Be'eri. And 2 days after that, we learned that she died, actually. She was murdered. And it was like, you know, to take this trip, like taking all what's supposed to be childhood and adulthood and so on, and murder it and kill it. And I understood that there is no childhood again for my kids, and of course for a lot of kids from our area and maybe in the greater Israel.
But your family is now okay. I mean, okay, yeah, is relative, but physically, I mean,
yeah,
your family itself is intact. Yeah,
no one got killed, no one kidnapped. It's an achievement nowadays in our area.
And
kind of a miracle.
Miracle.
Kind of a miracle, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, how many of Nirim members were murdered and how many are missing that assumed to be probably kidnapped by Hamas or the Islamic Jihad in Gaza now, these days?
Yeah. 5 people murdered and 5 people are kidnapped or missing. And it's, you know, the proportion in Protective Edge in 2014 to major people in Nirim community was killed by a rocket, by Hamas rocket. And in Nachal Oz, 4-year kid also got killed, and the two communities were in a great disaster, and it took years in order to do something about it. But now we are talking about five murdered, five missing, and we are saying, thank God, and this is a miracle. And of course, it's not only a miracle from God. It was a lot of good people, like I mentioned, the people with guns that managed to do something in the first hours. All the people, as much as we know, all the people got killed and kidnapped in the first 3 hours, maybe even less. After that, they managed to, they stayed, the terrorists stayed, and still there was a lot of devastating thing that they do and set on fire houses and so on, but they didn't manage to kill people. And in a way, they understood that there are people that that can do something about it. And in those hours, and that was the only time that the army came, kind of an army, and a helicopter came and shot towards the terrorists. So it's kind of a miracle that we had less, we just learned, I thought maybe 4 or 5 people were inside the kibbutz. We learned that more than 30. But in other places like Nir Oz, like Be'eri, like Fa'aza, we are talking about more than 100. I must say, in order for the listener to know, that they also did a lot of damage in the houses themselves. They stole a lot of things, from bicycles to laptops to cell phones, passports, jewelry, cars. They ruined a lot of cars, including myself and my wife, 2 cars. So we have a kind of a miracle. Of course, it's 5 people, and every people is a whole world. And now we are dealing with the missing people. I myself coordinating our group that deals with the missing people from Nirim. We will just we'll have a trip tomorrow to go to the families. And I can't really imagine. I walk with them. Of course, we are talking with them and so on, and we will meet them personally. Of course, we know them for many years, but I can't really imagine what it's like. You know, our best friends in Nirim, their son and his wife are missing. And actually, the army said that you have indications that they are in Gaza. And what can you think, you know, what is going on there? Of course, you don't know what they feel there in Gaza under another attacks, of course, of our army, you know, of the IDF. How is the treatment? We know, unfortunately, it's hard for me to talk about it, you know, about rapes and hitting people. And we're talking about kids. We're talking about this couple. It's really a couple with troubles of himself. And we're talking about 86 and 85 years old people. Yeah. I know some of them, of course. We know so many of the people that got killed and kidnapped, and their families. So it's kind of, you know, of a pogrom and a disaster for all the communities around. So it's devastating.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, I'm putting it in quotes, of course, that your community was lucky in a way, because you mentioned Be'eri that suffered 108 people who got murdered. And I think that they have almost 100, like 50 or 60 people still missing, right?
And we don't know exactly, but
yeah.
You know, now I know that in Be'eri there are still 70 bodies, Israelis, that they didn't have a final
identification.
Some of them from the party near Reim, but most of them from Be'eri. In the case of Nir Oz, we are talking now about something like 80 people missing and more than 30 murdered. So yeah, it's devastating. You just need to think that a quarter of the community in Nir Oz vanished. Now they are in. We are in a hotel in Elad. They are in another hotel, and it's like they are seeing their community, and it's not the same community. Again, we're talking about one from four that is missing or killed.
I want to ask you, I mean, it's moving for me also. It's hard to make this conversation. I want to ask you, how are you supporting each other these days within the community and within the communities themselves? Everybody who managed to get alive and is not hospitalized because they're injured are now in the same hotels, right? They kept the whole community or trying to keep the communities together.
Yeah, and this is what we learned from another rounds of this horrible war, that this is part of the healing, of course. I must say that it's really moving. I feel in a way that we are in some kind of a deep failure towards our children. I talked about the childhood of these children that vanished. And I feel that the repair is the only repair, we hope, that they will see us rise from this horrible situation. And I must say that it's really amazing, all the communities in Israel and, of course, also abroad, if I'm talking about the Jewish people, and even not only Jewish, not only Jews, and also in Israel, a lot of Bedouins that I know and so on, are volunteering, giving so many things to us in terms of psychologists and in terms of bringing food and clothes and whatever we want and need. Right now, we want to go to visit our dog, which is of course she's part of the family, and she's in a fostering family that loves her so much. We don't know what will happen in the end of the war, if she will want to come with us. And the power of the strength of the community itself, it's amazing. My wife, and I'm so proud of it, she's leading those rounds and those times that we have to go to be refugees, usually for several days. Now we're talking about term that we don't know, maybe month, maybe I hope a lot of weeks, but not more than that. And she actually, it's in Irim, it's a women's leadership, and also in another communities, and they are doing such a great work, and they are giving a lot of missions to people. Of course, this is again part of the healing, or part of the need for us to rise up and not dwell down into the black places, black hole that you can't really go back from. And people support each other. I'm always saying to people, they are always talking about Nirim as a strong community. And this is true, of course. And in Nirim, like every other community, there are weak people with all kind of circumstances. But as a group, as a community, we hold each other really in a good way. And I must say that this is really different for communities like Ofakim, that this is maybe the first time that they were part of the war in such a strong way. Something like 50 people got killed in Ofakim because terrorists came in this Saturday into Ofakim. And if we're talking about Sderot and Ashkelon, and it's really, and of course, I myself grew up in Ashkelon, and in the last years, I lived in Sderot, and I know Ofakim very good. I was just Friday morning, I was in a sukkah of people that got killed. You know, hosted us in Hoshana Rabbah teaching. And after that, they moved outside when they heard there is terrorist attack with their guns, and got killed. So for them, it's much harder, because there isn't a community that are organized and given support to each other. Just today, I met someone, a family from Sderot. She needed medical care for her children. And she didn't know what to do. And I called the Nirim team of health, and they helped her. But this is the short term. In the short term, in a way, we are good. Of course, we are dealing with devastating things like missing people, and now the funeral will start today. We are burying the head of the of Shaar HaNegev Council, which is another friend of mine that got killed in the first hours of the attack. But in the medium and the long term, of course, we will need much more help and support in order to build again our communities, in order to build our houses. A lot of damage and harm caused to the places, to Nirim, to Niroz, to Be'eri, Kfar Aza, and other places. So right now, I'm trying to kind of focus in the main attempts of the government, of the NGOs, of the philanthropists, of the very good people abroad and in Israel that wants to give resources in terms of money and not only in other terms, to give for that. You know, we don't need right now a lot of support in what we experience. Again, maybe it will be for months in Elat, and maybe they will take us to another kibbutz in the Negev area as a kind of between the those states of being in Nirim and returning to Nirim. We will be there, but we need a lot of support and a lot of resources in order to build Nirim, rebuild Nirim. And of course, I myself dream of a flourishing community, again, flourishing community based on our community, and maybe even more, to be stronger, not only in terms of security and military. And I'm hoping, and this is what need to be, diplomatic solution with no Hamas around, with the Palestinian Authority and Egypt and other parties. But we need also a lot of resources in order to rebuild our houses, our community, and make it even stronger.
Yeah, you already jumped to the next day. Is there any forecast on when you will be able to return to your homes? No. At least the homes that are still intact. I mean, some of the homes need a work to be done, and some works need to be redone, like rebuilt, because they were completely burned to the ground.
Yeah. No, we don't know. And also the government doesn't know. It depends on a lot of parameters. Of course, how the war will end. Yeah. I really hope that we will stay on Gaza area, this war. Of course, some things happening in the north, but I'm hoping that not a war. A complete war, it is a complete another situation. But again, even if this will be the war, and I hope that the IDF can abolish Hamas and there will be another government in Gaza, it will be again a matter of many weeks, maybe even months. It will be months, of course, but we don't know exactly how much. How many? And again, even if, I don't know, if a month from now or 2 months from now, we'll end the war, and I hope in another place of security, we will need another month to rebuild our houses and our actually infrastructures of gas and water and electricity got hurt really badly. And what will happen with schools? I don't know. Again, my older son need to have his graduate exams. And right now he's out of school, of course. But even if we'll go, I don't know, people are talking about the Negev area. For example, Bet Kama, it's another kibbutz. It's something like, I believe, 30 kilometers or more from Gaza. Where did they are going to go to study? No, yeah. Again, in Shaar HaNegev and Eshkol, I don't know. I don't think so. In Bet Kama, I don't know. So we really don't know. Again, we are out of our original jobs. Right now, a lot of people are in the military. And there are no schools, but I believe that in a week or two, some things will come up again. I don't know, it won't be normal, but kind of normal. We don't know what will be with us. And again, it's a very strange situation. A friend of mine asked me, how is it in there is a term in Hebrew, afaga, like you are evacuated for several days and then you are coming back to your house. And I told him, unfortunately, you don't understand our situation. We are not going to go to come back to our houses in the near future. And this is really sad. No, our all belongings are there, our stability, our home, with all the meaning of home is there, and we are not home yet.
And some people's life, I would say life's work and life's projects are there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're mentioning that a lot is dependent on what's going to be with Gaza. And I think that, you know, sadly speaking, and we're not going to go into politics on this episode, even though I hosted you before in 2022. We spoke about other issues. And the real question is what's going to be with Gaza? Because if Hamas will stay in power there, then there's not going to be quiet. Not for them and not for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I strongly believe that it needs a bigger involvement of the international community on helping the Palestinians, and that will help us as well. I mean, but one of the ways of helping Palestinians will be to free Gaza from Hamas, I would say.
Yeah, it's a really very simple reality in our area. We can't go back if the Hamas will be again on the fence, on the wall, on the border. Actually, I myself was in favor of talking with Hamas and getting a diplomatic agreement with Hamas, with the Palestinian Authority, with Egypt, with whatever people and countries that we can talk in order to gain a diplomatic solution. Right now, you know, that in our life, there is a mixture of good and evil, or good and bad. But they were in the ultimate evil, unfortunately. I didn't even fear that things like that will happen. And the ultimate evil, unfortunately, you need to break. You need to go, unfortunately, again, war, it's a very bad and dirty thing for all the involved parties. But right now we need to do this war. I believe that like ISIS, and again, we compare, of course, what happened to ISIS. And in the US, they said it's worse than ISIS. And even with our history, people went back to comparing horribly to Nazi regime or act or ideology. So you need to break that. It will be very hard. Again, a lot of soldiers, unfortunately, that will kill. But again, if we won't do that, it will be worse in a year or two, or even weeks or month. Having said that, if that will happen, of course, we will need to have a new agreement there. We will need to have another government. I totally agree that this will be, again, a better place for the Palestinians, as well as for Israelis. If I were a Palestinian right now in Gaza or in the West Bank, I was also fearful of Hamas, because this is the way that those kind of ideology and regime acting. They are killing the ultimate enemy, and then they will kill the traitors, and then they will kill everyone that speaks in a different way or something like that. And this is really bad for Palestinians and Israelis. I want to say also that because of that, and also because of our morality, Jewish morality and universal morality, we need to do whatever we can to harm the civilians, to harm the families, the kids, the old people in Gaza as less as we can. Of course, I'm not naive. Part of the war, of course, when we are talking about Gaza, which is so crowded,
It's one of the most condensed places in the world.
Yeah, yeah. So there will be, and we see what happened only yesterday. It's not the IDF. It's the Islamic Jihad.
The Islamic Jihad failed rocket that fell on a hospital.
Yeah,
by the way, now they are saying that it wasn't killing 500 people, that they were blowing up numbers for propaganda matters, but it still hurt the Palestinians themselves.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of civilians have been killed in those. Now we are talking about 12 days, and it will be more than that. But still, I believe that we can do more in order to be cautious, because, again, it's our interest, because we want another reality, because we want, as you mentioned, a new coalition against Hamas, like it was against ISIS, including Arab countries. And because we are still have a very clear conscience and morality and compass of this Jewish morality that says we don't want to harm people that are not involved. We don't want to harm, like Abraham said to God in Sodom and Gomorrah, if there will be 50 or 40 or 30 or even 10 people that are not involved, that they didn't do any harm, we don't want a collective punishment. So this is really thing that really important for me to say, that we don't want to hurt people that are not involved, and civilians and kids and so on.
And thank you, Avi, for bringing this voice, because in a way it feels that many Israelis are just looking to retaliate and the blood is gushing. I know that even, you know, in Israeli communities abroad, people are frustrated and angry and grieved with our brothers and sisters in Israel. So
I can understand that fully, of course. But again, this is our challenge right now. I don't want a revenge. A revenge won't help, of course. I want to break Hamas. I want to hurt Hamas. I want to take them out of control in government in Gaza. But I don't need any revenge. I don't need high numbers of Palestinians dead only for those numbers.
Avi, I really want to thank you for talking to me. I know that you have a lot more important tasks to do. And I just pray for better days in Israel. And if there is anything that, you know, we can help, let us know. I'm going to put the link for the GoFundMe that you made for Nirim, for your community.
Yeah.
And I really hope for better days in Israel. Thank you,
Avi. Thank you for support. I really appreciate that. And this is an important thing to do. We have another important thing, but this is really important.
Thank you, Avi.
Thank you, Kobi.
If you found this episode enlightening or thought-provoking, be sure to subscribe to Balagan on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And hey, if you're feeling extra generous, leave me a review. Your feedback means the world to me and helps others to discover the show. Of course, sharing the episode link with others will also be greatly appreciated. Remember, the conversation doesn't have to stop here. Join me on Balagan's Facebook group to continue discussing today's episode and connect with fellow listeners. I would love to hear your thoughts, questions, and suggestions for future topics. You are more than welcome to check my website, www.balaganil.com, for additional resources. I'm committed to connecting you with Israel and providing you with proper context. Until the next time, remember that knowledge is power. Keep learning, keep growing, and continue engaging with Israel. I can't wait to catch you in the next episode of Balagan.